Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody. And today, welcome to this broadcast, webinar podcast, no matter how you're listening to it. And what I'm going to talk to you about today is sort of like a part two, I guess, of information that you really need to probably be aware of and may not know that you need to be aware of for when you're newly pregnant. Okay, so a few things I want to go through. Now, if you've listened to part one, I did think afterwards, just a PS on that one, that another test that is very good to ask your midwife or obstetrician to do in your early pregnancy is a chicken pox antibody test if you're not sure if you've had chicken pox. It's called varicella. And now this is coming like from my heart actually, because I had chicken pox when I was pregnant with my second child, which I had got off my first baby. I was not, so my little toddler had chicken pox, gave it to me. I was 20 weeks pregnant, and I got to tell you, I was really sick. And long story that I won't go into, but we're pretty conclusive that that affected that second baby's placenta fairly significantly. Yeah, you want to find that out. If you know you've had chickenpox, often, you know, you might know because you might have a little scar on your forehead or something. Go, oh, yeah, I had chickenpox when I was little. That's fine. But if you're not sure and your mum's not sure, good idea to find out if you've had it. What that means is that if you have not had chickenpox, you definitely want to kind of avoid young children as much as you can in pregnancy, because you know they're contagious before we realize that they're contagious with chickenpox, and it is pretty contagious. And also after this pregnancy, you might want to go and get a vaccine for it, because the vaccines don't last forever. They last around about 5 years depending on your immune system, but certainly having protection during the years of you being fertile and potentially falling pregnant, yeah, take it from one that's been there, done that, and not wanted that t-shirt. Yeah, good idea. And I didn't realize that I hadn't had chickenpox. I assumed that I had. And I never bothered my caregiver, never bothered to ask me if I had, and which meant I never bothered to ask my mother, because she could have told me straight away, oh yes, you never had chickenpox. I made sure you didn't get chickenpox. I'm thinking, why did you make sure I didn't get chickenpox? But anyway, doesn't matter, too late, it is what it is. I now have antibodies for it. So that's one thing. Now, prescriptions when you find out that you're pregnant. So you will get prescribed generally iodine, and that is because we know that if you're low in iodine, it can potentially increase your chances of a neural tube defect. And that's basically the spine, and where the spine doesn't join as it should. And that's where you can get things like spina bifida. It just doesn't close as it should. It's a kind of complicated thing to explain within embryology, but basically an embryo at its most basic level is flat. And then at a certain point, it kind of folds in on itself, and you get this center fold in your body, which creates that circle around the spinal column. And also this little scar here, where you are, that's the scar of the fold, is that little line above your lips. Isn't that interesting? So folic acid is what you are prescribed to do with preventing the neural tube defect. Separate subject, iodine. Okay, the reason that you're prescribed iodine in some countries is because some countries' soil is low in iodine. And not all countries, some countries, the country I'm from, practice midwifery in, it was low, which is New Zealand. But I wouldn't get all stressed about the iodine or whether you are on it, aren't on it, from the perspective of if you are using pink salt. So that's Himalayan salt or Celtic salt, the salt that has not been bleached white. Well, that salt is full of fantastic minerals, including iodine. So it probably is not an issue if you're using that as your salt in your daily household. The reason why white salt is commonly, you'll find it in the supermarket being called iodized salt, is because they have added iodine, that mineral, that trace element that's not found in some soil. They've added it in to the salt for everybody to consume on a regular basis so nobody gets rickets. Yeah, so that's what it's all about. Okay, so to go over that again, folic acid is the one that you will get prescribed for around about the first sort of 12 to 13 weeks. Beyond about 14 weeks, there's not a lot of purpose in taking it because that fold has already occurred with the embryology. Yeah, that would be a good thing to be taking before you find out that you're pregnant if you are trying for a family. Of course, 50% of pregnancies don't realize that they're pregnant until after they are pregnant. So in that case, you just get onto that folic acid as soon as possible. You want it for that first 3 months, just while that fold of the neural cord occurs. And the iodine, if your soil is low in it, you'd want to kind of take the whole time through your pregnancy. Or as I say, you could, if you use pink salt within your household, or iodized salt within your household, you're probably covered anyway. Okay, so next topic, obstetric family history. Now, you know what has happened more than once in my career, which you really don't want to hear, is when a woman has got preeclampsia and her mother turns around and goes, "Oh yes, I had that all my pregnancies. Runs in the family." And I would have asked that woman during her booking appointment if she knew of anybody in her family, her mother, her grandmothers, her sisters, who would have had preeclampsia and some other conditions. So what your mother or your sisters or your grandmothers have had, if you can find out, is really irrelevant. So we'd like to know that, because there are things that we might do in your pregnancy a little different, sort of treat you a little bit more high risk for those. So say, for example, preeclampsia, well, we might suggest that we give you a prescription of aspirin or maybe calcium until your placenta implants, and maybe a little while afterwards, because we know that placental implantation can cause we don't understand the full cause of it scientifically, but we know that it's relevant to it. So that we know that women who have had preeclampsia before, then if we give them with their second pregnancy some calcium and aspirin, that can reduce their chances. We're talking about low dose aspirin, what they call baby aspirin. There's aspirin that you can just buy in a supermarket over the counter without any prescription. And we know that that can help. So that's, if we've got a strong familial or family history of that, then, you know, your obstetrician or midwife may say that that's a good idea for you too as a preventative. And other things that we particularly would like to hear about within familial history is if you've got, I just want to check my notes, I don't miss anything. Yes, of course, gestational diabetes and preterm labor or premature babies. Those things are really, you know, good for us to know. And then the other big thing is if there's any babies born with abnormalities at birth. So that's either anatomical or genetic, so meaning chromosomal or structural sort of thing. Particularly things like, say, hip dysplasia, where they've got clicky hips that can be dislocatable. And so those things do run in families, and it's really good for us to know that stuff in advance. So find out, you know, get a good history so that it's not something that family, I mean, again, I've had that with hips dysplasia several times, yeah, where the parents have gone, "Oh, look, yes, our child has it." And, I'm saying that, and from a neonatal examination. And then it turns out, you know, 2 weeks later, they go, "Oh, I turned out that I had it when I was a child and I didn't even know," you know. So it would be really great to have a conversation with your mum if you can, grandparents if you can, and your sisters. All right, another topic I want to cover off, like this is just a whole random list today, but there's just all these miscellaneous things that are good to know. Urinary tract infections. Now, women get more urinary tract infections than men because our urethra is shorter. So, in other words, the distance between our bladder and the outside world is shorter. So it means, so with men, with their urethra, because it goes all the way along their penis until it gets into their bladder, there's more chance of any bacteria basically dying or being killed off by our own, you know, protection systems within our mucosal tissue. So men getting urinary infections is relatively rare. But women, yeah, well, because our urethra is shorter, it does happen more often. And it does happen more often when we're pregnant because our immune system changes, because the mucosal tissue changes. So the environment changes within. It's basically a bit more sugar rich when in that area. And also the pressure of the weight of the baby sort of ends up forcing the bladder to be kind of a bit closer to the outside world. So put that all together and we can have more urinary tract infections. And when you have a urinary tract infection, because of the infection and because of the immune system's response to it, it means that urinary tract infections, be it in our bladder, where you'll feel it down here as urgent, frequent need, or so it's painful, urgent, frequent urination because it's in our bladder, or you can feel it if it's got way worse, basically, and it's become an upper urinary tract infection rather than a lower urinary tract infection, when it's creeped its way up and all the way up your ureters, or one of your ureters into your one of or both of your kidneys. And that becomes pyelonephritis, which is actually really pretty serious. But either way, if it's lower urinary tract or upper urinary tract, it can still cause, because of the immune response in our system, it can cause miscarriage, the big M. And beyond 20 weeks, we don't call it miscarriage anymore, we call it premature labour, so a preterm birth. It's a big deal, actually. Even though it might seem a minor thing, it can have some pretty significant consequences. So at any stage in your period, in your pregnancy, if you start to suffer from urgent, frequent or painful urination, meaning a bladder infection, or you start to have that lower flank pain in your back, you need to get tested for a UTI, a urinary tract infection, and let's find out if you have and you need antibiotics. Please don't treat it lightly. You know, it could have massive consequences to your pregnancy. UTIs, we want to avoid. Okay. And if you are a person who's prone to UTIs, you probably already know, but if you don't know, cranberry tablets can be great to take, because they kind of, we don't completely understand how it works, but they sort of seem to make a, they seem to line, this part of them that lines the wall of the bladder that seems to stop bacteria managing to implant and become a urinary tract infection. So yeah, that can be quite good to take. But talk to your medical herbalist. I wouldn't always necessarily say talk to your medical doctor about it, because unless they're a naturopath, they're not trained on cranberry tablets. They don't know what they do. So yeah, talk to a naturopath or medical herbalist if you wish to get an opinion on that. Okay, next thing I want to talk about, CVS, chorionic villus sampling, which is done at about 10 to 12 weeks. Now, in the country where I practice midwifery, which is New Zealand, this is a very rare thing to be done. And it was really only done for women who had high risk, say previous history of a chromosomal genetic abnormality. I know that in some countries it's a little bit more common. Basically what happens is that samples of, they go in with a needle and remove samples of cells, or attempt to, of the, what they call the villus cells, which is kind of to do with the placenta, and they will look at those and see if they can see any abnormalities. Now, one thing that, I mean, certainly there's a small risk of miscarriage with it, but the other thing is there is a small risk of it not being correct, because if the fetus is female, and if in that case there's always the possibility that the cells collected were not neonatal or fetal, I should say, but they were actually maternal. Because now if the cells show to be male, well, then it's a no-brainer. They clearly are embryonic, fetal cells and not maternal cells. So anyway, You would speak to an obstetrician about that and whether that's something that's the right thing for you. After that, there is something called an amniocentesis, which is usually done around 14 to 16 weeks at the earliest, but it really can be done at any stage. Scientifically, it can be done at any stage. And the commonest reasons that is done is because there is a high risk result came back in a screen for a neural tube defect at that sort of 12-week ultrasound scan. So let's say a 12-week scan says, oh yes, look, this baby may be high risk for Down's syndrome. So then the parents go on at around 14 to 16 weeks, they can't do it before that, to have an amniocentesis. And that is again when the obstetrician will go in with a needle, or sometimes it's a radiographer, will go in with a needle and take a sample of some of the cells. It does carry a small risk of a miscarriage, I think of half of 1% or something like that. It does occur, and that's when they can absolutely, definitively tell you the chromosomal situation and the sex of the baby. Now realize that they are looking for a whole gamut of different chromosomal abnormalities, but it doesn't mean it's every chromosomal abnormality that exists, but it is a wide selection of them. And remember, of course, it is not looking for anatomical disorders. That is done through an ultrasound scan. What it's looking at is genetic disorders. The ones that we're aware of, the ones that are included in the study. So again, it's a big decision to have one of those. It's certainly not a routine exam. And what I would say is that if you would absolutely terminate a baby, if it was to have a genetic disorder, then you absolutely should be doing the test. If you would never in a million years consider terminating a baby for an abnormality, then there's not a lot of point in doing the test. Perhaps, you know, so it's a very personal decision on what is right for you and your circumstances. And you should receive some very good explanation and counseling, understanding the risks and the benefits of that amniocentesis or CVS chorionic villus sampling before you would ever consent to doing it, because that is called gaining informed consent. Okay. Now, the last thing, a lighter topic I want to end on today is, what are the foods that you can and can't or shouldn't eat while you're pregnant? Like, because if man alive, if you look up on a website, on Google or whatnot, foods I should not eat when I'm pregnant. Oh, it's almost like there's nothing left, you know, because there's something wrong with everything. So it can feel. So I want to explain it to you in the most easiest to understand, simplest and straightforward way to go. Okay, very firstly, one of the biggest things that you're told not to do is there's loads and loads of different protein you're told not to eat. And the reason is because the most important thing you're wanting to do with food during pregnancy is avoid at all costs food poisoning. That's what it's all about. With regards to the protein. So when people say, oh, you know, you shouldn't eat salmon sushi, or you shouldn't eat a mince pie from the dairy, and you shouldn't eat ham that's been sitting out in the deli all day. Yeah, totally agree with them all. You should not, you have to avoid everything that possibly could lead to food poisoning. But you could also use intelligence with it. So, can you eat sushi? Of course you can eat sushi if you make it at home and it's vegetarian, or it's really well-cooked chicken or fantastically well-cooked fresh salmon. That's okay. Would you buy sushi that's been sitting all, you know, for hours on a deli counter? No, don't do that. Okay, would you choose shellfish from the supermarket that's been sitting there? No. But hey, if you're out fishing and you've just caught some scallops or mussels and they're absolutely completely fresh out of the water and you cook them thoroughly, well, yeah, that should be fine. I've even heard people say, oh, that you shouldn't eat brie cheese. Oh, look, it's more soft cheeses are renowned for, holding bacteria and sort of going a bit rotten earlier than other cheeses. But, if it's a fantastically fresh, just open bit of camembert, well, that would be fine. But yeah, I would not eat the brie that's been sitting in the back of the fridge for 2 weeks. Yeah, no, don't. Okay, so do you understand? That's what we're talking about, is it's all protein based. So well-cooked meat, not rare. Well-cooked eggs, no raw yolks or whites. So that's what we're talking about. All right, now other things with regards to your vegetables. With regards to your food, I should say. Firstly, well-washed vegetables. Yeah, because there is some disease that cats particularly can put onto our vegetables, which we don't want when we're pregnant. So if they've urinated or defecated, like within the veggie garden, yeah, okay. So well-wash your vegetables. Fruit, well wash as well, but particularly with fruit tends to grow off the, hanging off the ground away from cats. But with fruit, goodness me, the amount of times it's dipped and sprayed and everything else, like just from a toxin perspective, I think it's a good idea to wash it. But what is even better is if you can buy organic. I know that's not always geographically easy to do, depending on where you live. And sometimes it's very expensive. But if you can kind of go for really well-washed vegetables and organic fruit, that would be great. Or organic both, if you could. Oh, and going back to protein, free range if you can, please. Free range chicken, eggs, not battery, ever, 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 ever. SPCA approved locations would be great. Free range pork, please. They're incredibly intelligent animals and should never be caged. Okay, but that's just a personal peeve. And then the last thing is your carbs. All right. So we've covered your protein, we've covered your fruits and vegetables. And as long as you have fruits and vegetables, there's loads of minerals and vitamins there. But your carbs, you want complex carbs. So, brown rice, wholemeal pasta. Those are your best choices. A baked potato, fantastic. And you want to avoid the refined foods, particularly the enemy of pregnancy is that white refined sugar. Look, a little bit, that's fine as a bit of a treat, but once a day max, please. We are putting you at a higher risk factor of gestational diabetes if you're eating a lot of refined sugar and just making your blood sugar go up and down and up and down and up and down. Your system is already under strain being pregnant, and so let's not add to the problem. So that's everything today. I want to wish you all a wonderful rest of your week, and we will talk to you later on another wonderfully interesting topic. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. kathyfrey.com.